Bienvenue and welcome to Akeem's Dream Show. My name is Akeem the Dream, also known as Brown Sugar Supreme, also known as The Dark Knight Batman. I'm Batman. This show is a variety show because I had a lot of ideas growing up and wrote them down, and my curiosity is insatiable. And you'll notice that I have a lot of random ideas and subjects, but I think that's what makes it fun. Variety is the spice of life, and I like to keep it spicy, and you will find that out very quickly. Remember, folks, never grow old with no stories to tell. And it's finally time to spice things up. Let's go.
Check this out.
But when I was 11, I picked stocks. I had the whole wrong idea. I thought stocks were things that went up and down, and I charted them. I read books on technical analysis. I read everything. And I thought the important thing was to predict what a stock would do and predict the stock market. And then I read Ben Graham, and I realized that I was doing it exactly the wrong way when I read the book, The Intelligent Investor. And from that point, I never bought another stock. I bought businesses that happened to be publicly traded, but I became an owner of a business, and I did not care whether a stock went up or down the next day or the next week or the next month or the next year. And I didn't have any idea what it would do. I didn't know what the stock market would do, but I knew businesses.
Well, Brennan, thank you very much for coming on the show today. It's your second outing, my man, my best friend, on the Akeem's Dream Show. How blessed are we as an audience? All the people out there kind of know about you adjacently, and they've heard the mystic, the legends, the myths, the lore behind Brennan Bellevaux and his ascent to power in the United States, and how he essentially went to that country, and inside of 3 years, he's achieved the American dream, buying sports cars, achieving great financial success, investing, getting jobs at the most highest institutions in the country. And, you know, we're going to talk about awards that are coming your way sometime soon. But Brennan, it's an honor and a privilege to have you back on the show. Thanks for coming back.
Mr. Keem Brown, it is an absolute pleasure to be on the show with you. Second time on the show, and, you know, all-time listener, man, since day one. So, you know, I just appreciate you. Love what you're doing, man. Changing the city, the landscape. You know, I can't wait to drive down White Avenue, Gateway Boulevard, and see the product that that Akeem the Dream had dreamt up and put together. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun, and no better place than the City Champions, man. So I'm excited to see it, and it's just it's an all-time pleasure getting to talk to you again.
Thanks, brother. And speaking of the City Champions, we're going to talk about the Edmonton Oilers here in a second. But I really appreciate those kind words, and I'm just doing whatever I can for your city when it comes back. I want to make sure I give it back to you in good hands. You know, just because you haven't lived here for a while doesn't mean it's not your city anymore, man. Trust me, when those wheels touch the ground on the high level bridge, the city knows who owns it, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking of that Drake lyric when we went to the Staples Center in LA, when Drake went to, you know, beat on his chest, and he said, you know, hitter gave it back to the city, she's yours.
Hey, buddy, you pretty much know the language by now. So yeah, I without further ado, let's jump into some hockey here. We're right in the midst of the hockey playoffs. We just finished the first round. And folks out there who don't know, Brennan was a really fantastic hockey player. He's got hockey heritage in his family by way of Jean Beliveau, the famous Montreal Canadian. And he was also a ref. I think you even did some coaching, right?
I did a little bit of coaching, yeah. I mean, reffing was a lot of fun. You know, I got a lot of crazy stories from all that stuff too, but yeah, we had a lot of good time. A lot of people yelling at me. I think one of the coolest moments though was when I was reffing, out of town, and, someone didn't like one of the calls and just yelled out in the stands. It was a pretty packed building, and they said, "F you, Beliveau, that was a horrible call." And I didn't know either of these two teams, and I just kind of smiled, and I was like, all right, they know who's reffing this game. That's pretty good. But, yeah, that was a fun time.
Did you acknowledge them, or are you just kind of just water off the ducks back?
Yeah. Smiled. I felt that was a compliment more than anything.
You know, you made it when they're chirping, you know?
Yeah, man. It was called a penalty shot. You know, you want to keep it exciting and fun for the crew. But yeah, man, we got lots to talk about this hockey playoff situation. What a wild time. I don't think anyone saw the Boston Bruins, the regular season record holding, you know, team getting knocked out in the first round by a wild card Florida Panthers.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. The parity that's happening right now, it's fantastic for hockey. I love what it's doing for the league, because I mean, the uncertainty, this is probably the most unpredictable playoffs we've had in about 20 years. So that's why I had to get you on, because nobody knows hockey better than you, besides Bob McKenzie. I mean, everyone else is pretty much sub-tier when it comes to hockey knowledge. So let's break down this first round. I mean, maybe series by series, ending off with the Oilers, because they gave me a bit of a shock, a little bit scary here early on. But now that we've discussed your pedigree, let's jump into it. So round by round here, we can maybe start with the biggest shock, I think, or the second biggest shock, the Avalanche and the Seattle Kraken. Seattle Kraken, yeah. Speaking of Kraken, they took their first crack at the playoffs, and boom, they're in the second round, beating the defending champions. What happened in that series?
Man, I did not see that one coming, but Seattle just came out flying. There's something to be said about these wild card teams coming in here. Seattle finished in the first wild card spot. And Colorado had, you know, played their way Stanley Cup champions last year. You know, I don't know if there's a little bit of a Stanley Cup hangover. Didn't seem to be an issue for Tampa, who made it there 3 years in a row, but I don't think anyone saw this coming. And one of the biggest factors for me was when Makar hit Jared McCann and McCann went down with an injury, and that was their 140 goal score. Look, Seattle doesn't have any big superstar names. They just do it by committee. They got four lines that just go out. They attack you hard. They play tough on you. And, you know, really with, you know, sub-average goaltending, Grubauer had a really average regular season, if not sub-average. He had a 2.85 goals against average and an 8.95 save percentage. That is not anywhere near what you need to get in the playoffs. Mind you, he was much better in the playoffs, but I don't think anyone saw this coming. And I thought everyone thought it was probably going to be a lock for the Colorado Avalanche to win that. And, you know, five might have even been generous for Seattle, especially with McCann going out. But Grubauer stood on his head. He played in Colorado for a few years. And, you know, and Seattle's going on to the next round. I don't know what's going on, but they had a few funny issues going on in Colorado. Obviously, losing Cogliano, that sucks. You don't have Nazem Kadri. You know, Valerie Nichushkin is dealing with some bizarre off-ice stuff. Don't know what's going on there. Rumor is he might have fled to Russia, and there was this incident where someone had to get rescued from his house or apartment, and a lot of weird stuff going on behind the scenes. But at the end of the day, you still have Nate McKinnon, you still have Cale Makar, you still have, you know, an incredible goaltender who you picked up from the New York Rangers last year. So, I mean, you know, was it the same team as last year? No, but should they have gotten through Seattle? Probably. But now you've got the Seattle Kraken playing the Dallas Stars, who, you know, people were, that was a coin toss against the Minnesota Wild. So, but this is going to be a really fun series. I'm going to, my prediction, I'll just say at the very beginning, I've got Dallas in seven going into this one. What about you?
Wow. I would say, yeah, I got Dallas going maybe six, 4-2. I think that Dallas looks really strong. They look very, they look intact. They seem to be hitting their stride. But yeah, the Colorado, this just seems like to be the perfect storm of misfortune, I guess. But also that hangover you're talking about, man, that's real in sports. And didn't happen to Tampa, like you mentioned. But for the less seasoned champion, let's say, it's they maybe took it off the gas a bit and weren't really taking advantage. The one stat that stood out to me about this series and the Bruins is all the home losses. Like, they lost three out of the four home games in the series, which is like kind of like crazy, because you'd think with home court advantage or home ice advantage, that would kind of win the day, at least break even. But they lost more than 50% of their games at home, which is kind of alarming to me. So, you know.
Well, and here's the thing too, is look at the altitude in Colorado. You know, it's Denver, it's the Mile High City. It's much harder to play there. A lot of athletes go and train in places like that, you know, because it's different oxygen demands. You know, that's really where you kind of toughen up. I know a lot of fighters, that's what they do. So, you know, Seattle having to go in there for four games, you know, in an environment that might be a little bit more challenging. It's shocking to me that they did so well, but you know what? They outplayed the Avalanche and deserve to move on. But, you know, had that first round not happened the way it did and seeing what the Seattle Kraken can do, I probably would have had Dallas in you know, quicker span. But I just think they're going to squeak out a few games. But to me, the X factor is going to be Jake Ottinger, Dallas Stars goaltender. He's an absolute, you know, if he's not a top three goalie, he's definitely a top five. He was 37, 11, and 11 in the regular season, 2.37 goals against average, 0.919 save percentage. And you've got an absolute superstar in Jason Robertson. You know, Tyler Seguin's playing good. Dadonov was a great pickup. And Rupe Hintz had 12 points in the first round. So you know, you've got a lot of firepower. You know, they're strong on the point as well too.
But a lot of vets, Jamie Benn, all those guys.
Jamie Benn, you know, these guys, you know, it just seems like it's clicking for them. And I think a lot of people had, you know, even Minnesota winning that series too. But you've got two really great teams. Dallas finished second in the Central. You know, both definitely deserve to be there. But it's going to be a fun series. But I do have Dallas eventually winning this one.
All right, fascinating. So that's that kind of covers two series so far. And the next one we got is the Vegas Golden Knights against the Winnipeg Jets. What's going on with that series? I mean, Vegas looks strong. Winnipeg has one of the top five goaltenders with Hellebuck. I think I'm pronouncing that name right. What happened in that series? I didn't really see too much of what was going on there.
I think Winnipeg just kind of got beat up with injuries. Vegas is deep, and I think it's going to be a challenge for Edmonton a little bit too. I see Edmonton, you know, being able to compete with Vegas, no problem, but this is a different monster and this is a much deeper team. But the Winnipeg Jets are just, you know, they're beat up. It was a tough season. If you look at towards the end of the year, they were one of the worst teams in the NHL towards the end of the stretch. They were hanging on by a thread and they started out the year strong. They didn't go into the playoffs with a lot of momentum. You know, they really just had nothing that could compete with Vegas. So it wasn't a surprise. I was kind of surprised at how quickly it happened. I thought maybe they'd be able to squeak out another game against Vegas. But at the end of the day, the better team won. Vegas finished first in the Pacific and no surprise that they're moving on. You know, and I'm sure for Edmonton too, and Edmonton Oilers fans, you know, no disrespect to Winnipeg, but probably can be a lot more fun, you know, traveling on the road to go hang out in Vegas than it would have been in Winnipeg unless you like fishing.
I mean, yeah, Winnipeg and big mosquitoes, big time. Yeah, so, yeah. So this is a good change of pace. And I mean, Edmonton Oilers fans, they travel to LA, lots of Oilers jerseys in the stands in the Staples or Pornhub Center, whatever the center is called there in LA now. I think it's called crypto.com or something.
Crypto, yeah. Crypto's doing well too. That's a different conversation, but yeah.
Different conversation, definitely. So, but yeah, that was a tough series, Oilers versus the Kings. I remember last Friday watching the game. It was tied 1-1 and we went down 2-1 and I was like, whoa, this, I didn't get a text from any of my Oilers buddies that night and the drive home was quite quiet. So I'm glad that we were able to bounce back, but it was a bit of a rough start with the Kings. They just have a really good matchup against us.
Yeah. And the Kings got a lot better than they did last year too. Obviously, you know, Drew Doughty was back. You know, they had a few other injuries, you know, last year that they didn't have. Kevin Fiala was a great pickup for them. Kempe is just a stud out there for them as well, too. And, you know, big goaltending change. Korpisalo kind of fell apart a little bit towards the end of the series. But I do still think that was an upgrade from Jonathan Quick. No disrespect to him, you know, winning a couple cups there in Los Angeles. But the Oilers also got a lot better, too. I mean, you look at, you know, the pickups with Ekholm and Bukestad and you know, a lot of other guys took big steps. I mean, Nugent Hopkins, you know, had a quiet but good series, in my opinion. You know, he had a great regular season. Bouchard was an absolute beast out there. He had 10 points, you know, and the depth scored up. Look at game seven. It Clem Costin with, you know, will the real Clem Shady please stand up? And he scored two big goals in game six. And then Yamamoto, as McDavid called him, the little guy, showed up and scored a big goal, you know, to win that one too. And you got Stuart Skinner, who, you know, they had to pull. And I'll give the ultimate credit when Jack Campbell came in after they were down 3-0. That guy played phenomenal against his old team. You know, it's been a tough year for him too. I think he's going to get it back. He was an all-star goaltender in Toronto. And I think it's going to be a great tandem. These guys seem to really, you know, like each other. They get along. The team loves them. But, I mean, Jack Campbell at that moment in time saved the season. But, you know, the Oilers threw away some games. Game one, they should have won. They should have never lost that one going into overtime. You know, some tough calls. I do think that was a high stick, Oilers fan or not, you know, where that cost us in overtime. And, you know, but then we ended up getting some calls that went our way too. I still think the better team won. But, yeah, I think honestly, that was, in my personal opinion, that was a series where the winner of that series could end up going to the Stanley Cup Finals, because I think those two teams are just built so strong and so deep. And, you know, they're big teams. The Oilers are not a pushover team by any means. I mean, they will out-hit you. You've got Kane. You've got, you know, other pests on that team. And, you know, I love seeing you know, even Desharnais on the point too. That guy's just an absolute beast as well too. And so you got guys that'll, you know, score goals, you know, hit you, get under your skin. And it's just it's a great team. And Stuart Skinner's just a big composed guy. And I know we're kind of dipping between two different series, but it's hard not to talk about Vegas without talking about the upcoming matchup with Edmonton.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough matchup and a good one. I like that we have guys like Bouchard who can just like that slap shot he's got is just deadly, man, from the blue line. It's just lasers. And like you said, we got some game breakers. I had Ryan Chan, but another buddy of mine on the podcast, to break down the predictions for the NHL playoffs. And he said you need goaltending and game breakers to make a deep run. And we have a lot of game breakers, man. Draisaitl, McDavid, obviously. But then we got these other guys who can kind of be X factors. And then goaltending, man, Stuart Skinner, the one thing I think about him is he doesn't necessarily get rattled. He's too young to get rattled. He's just kind of in there, and he's along for the ride. And hats off to, like you said, Jack Campbell for keeping his head in the game and not being down when his name was called. You know, it's really easy in sports to let that get to you, and he was able to just go in and just play the game in the moment, be in the moment.
Well, and I'll say this too, even just talking about Vegas versus Edmonton, Vegas finished first in the Pacific, Edmonton second. I have Edmonton winning this. You know, I'm going to be generous to Vegas. I'll say Edmonton in seven games here. But, you know, when you talk about the goaltending too, it's going to be, I think, really interesting because Vegas basically had a goaltending carousel throughout the year with, you know, you had, you know, Logan Thompson, who played, you know, a ton of your games. He went down. You know, Robin Leonard went down. You got Jonathan Quick, who's backing up, you know, Lauren Brossoit, who was the Oilers' old backup, and he only played a handful of games in the regular season, and he didn't lose a single one in the regular season. I think he went 7-3, if I'm not mistaken. And then he went 4-1 in the playoffs with a 2.42 goals against average, .915 save percentage. He's great, wow. But it's going to be interesting. How can he, you know, how's he going to be able to play against his old teammates? You know, obviously McDavid, Draisaitl, these guys know him. You know, maybe they know his weaknesses. Maybe, you know, just from having him in practice, they're going to be able to pick some spots. But, you know, he looks composed. But essentially, you've got two inexperienced goaltenders going at it, you know, in this series. But, you know, if you look at the Oilers too, Skinner was the first rookie goaltender to win a playoff series since Grant Fuhr did in 1991. So,
wow.
You know, we've got something special here. But, and no one's talking about it, but this is finally what people had wanted for a long time. But this is Eichel versus McDavid in the playoffs. So this is going to be super interesting.
Okay, yeah, because Eichel was kind of like, oh, could he be better than McDavid, all this and that, right? I remember that in the early days. I think that's been finalized, but Eichel definitely probably still has a chip on his shoulder about that whole thing.
Big time, and he's waited a long time to get in the playoffs. And if you think that he's going to just give it up that easy, I don't think he is. But
I think,
you know,
he'd love to be able to say he beat McDavid. Yeah,
for sure. But they got, you know, they got big guys and plenty of firepower. You know, Chandler Stephenson, Mark Stone. They each had 8 points in the first round. You've got Marchessault, Eichel, Carlson. Those guys are great, and you know they're really strong on the point as well too. So it's going to be a really I think it's going to be a harder matchup than LA, but it's not, you know, anything the Oilers can't deal with. Vegas went 1-2-1 in the regular season against Edmonton. Edmonton went 3-0-1. So, you know, we did win the regular season, you know, series against them, but it's going to be what I think is going to be a long, but fun, you know, really, really tough series, but you just hope that our depth can keep going. And the power play we have to talk about as well too, because, you know, not only did they set the NHL, you know, record for the best power play in NHL history, but, you know, in a single series at almost 60% against LA, that was another record as well too. So
take advantage of our opportunities. The only thing I think Vegas has the advantage of is they have either Celine Dion or Britney Spears playing on rotation there on the strip. But we got Cook County and Brett Kiesel, man, anytime you want. So no problem. But
that's an even matchup for sure. You know, Bruno Mars and Brett Kiesel.
I mean, that's pretty, we're splitting hairs here, I think.
But, it is. Yeah, man. So apples and oranges.
Apples and oranges, man. Same fruit basket. Let's go to the Eastern Conference here. So we got the biggest upset of them all. I was at my boy Rob's today getting a donair. And as soon as I walk in, he's like, can you believe the Bruins shit the bed on that? Can you believe? I was like, was it a choke? He's like, I don't know what else you could call it. You know, I know that Bergeron going in kind of slowed them down a bit, but how can you have you know what this reminds me of a bit, except that they made it further, is the Warriors in 2016. They broke the record for wins in a season. They beat the Bulls record in 98. Steph Curry, all the Golden State Warrior guys, They get to the finals and they lose to LeBron after being up 3-1. The only thing with this is they didn't even make past first round.
I've got a really interesting stat to share with you. So the President's Trophy, I definitely think is a curse. I think once your team, you know, has nothing left to play for, you know, maybe some of your big guys are getting less minutes. Maybe, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, that's why, you know, you saw this with Tampa Bay a few years ago. You know, when Columbus came in and swept them, I think no one saw that coming at the time. That was a record as well too. But you got a team that's been fighting for their life for a while. They've been playing playoff hockey. And then you've got a team that's been let off the gas pedal. But here are the last 10 President's Trophies in the NHL. The Boston Bruins in 2023 lost in the first round. The Panthers last year, 2022, lost in the second round. Avalanche in 21 lost in the second round. Bruins in 2020 lost in the second round. Lightning in 2019 lost in the first round. Predators in 2018 lost in the second round. Capitals in 2017 second round. Capitals in 2016 second round. The Rangers in 2015 made it to the conference finals. And then again, the Bruins in 2014 lost in the second round. So in the last 10 years, these President's Trophies winners, not a single one has made it to the Stanley Cup finals. And most of them were knocked out in the second round, if not the first round.
So that means you maybe hit your peak. It's like those people who they're super popular in high school, and then, you know, they become adults and they're losers, right? Like, it's just like you peak too soon, man.
You know, you're trying to wow a lady, and then, you know, she's finally your girlfriend. You stop putting out the effort, you know, and it's like,
totally.
you got to keep going, you know.
It's time to double down now, man.
Every day is Valentine's Day, man, not just February 14th, right?
Every day is Christmas, baby. Open up those gifts. 100%.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so the Bruins, they didn't come down and open up their gifts on Christmas morning, man. They didn't leave any cookies out for Santa. It sounds like they just kind of, you know, they're big players. They came. I wasn't super impressed with Pastrnak. I wasn't super impressed with Bergeron this series. Goaltending went to let them down a bit. Again, same thing as Colorado. They lose 3 of the 4 home games. They had the home court advantage, of course, being the President's Trophy winners. 3 of the 4 games lose at home. How do you lose in front of Boston fans? Like, I cannot believe that. That's wild to me.
Well, and they were up 3-1 in the series too, and they went to overtime, and Ullmark fumbled the puck, and Tkachuk was able to put it in, and that to me was like, okay, here we go. Like, in Florida, you know, really changed this, and you know, at that point, he made it 3-2 in the series, and they just kept winning. I mean, you got to give Florida credit to win the last 3 games. And here's the thing too: is Florida has had, they did not have a great year. You know, they got it together. Pretty much, they got in the playoffs off of, you know, this new goaltender that they brought in, who ended up playing the first 2 games of the series. And then they went to Bobrovsky and then, you know, Matthew Tkachuk. But other than that, I mean, they were so close to not even making the playoffs. But it's just fascinating how we got to this point. But the Boston Bruins should have completely annihilated them in 5 games. It made no sense how they just completely fell apart. But
totally. I mean, it does not make sense. They fell apart, and I felt like just watching, I'm not as astute as far as like the Knicks and Knacks, X's and O's in hockey, but what I do pay attention to in hockey, like with anything else, is effort. And it just seems like on the battles, on the forecheck, in the corners, when they're dumping into the corners, like the Panthers players were just after it. Like, they were just winning the battles. And you mentioned Tkachuk, like, I don't like that guy at all, but I'd love to have him on my team because he's just like a fighter, well, right? Like, sure. He's going to fight for the loose pucks. He's going to get, and those matter, man. Over the course of like a series, if there's like 50 of those battles and you're on the other side of 25, I mean, you have a good chance of being in a position to have those knocking goals and just be in great positions, right? So that's what doesn't really get measured on the stat sheet, is the effort plays. And I think that the Panthers just whooped them on that.
Big time. Yeah. And I mean, so you've got the Panthers coming in, you know, playing in the Maple Leafs next. You know, they won their last 3 games, you know, and they just knocked off the best single team, you know, single season record Boston Bruins of all time. Like, you know, it's going to be a really interesting series against Toronto. But I mean, Florida is much deeper than I think people think. And there's Matthew Tkachuk's a pest, but so is, you know, Sam Bennett. And they've got, you know, other big names too. And Aaron Ekblad is one of the best defensemen, you know, out there. And, you know, if Bobrovsky's found his game now, I mean, that's going to be big, because Ilya Samsonov for the Leafs is, I mean, that was not a great series for him against Tampa. You know, he had a 3.14 goals against average and a .900 save percentage. You know, that's not that great. The Leafs allowed 21 goals in 6 games against Tampa. Wow. I mean, 5 goals a game against, like, you know, I mean, they're lucky that Vasilevskiy.
Tampa's loaded.
Yeah. Tampa's loaded too. I mean, they, you know, fell apart defensively, but, you know, if Bobrovsky's on his game, we've seen what he can do in the past. Like, it's going to be really tough, but, you know, I think this series is going to be, you know, it's going to be interesting. Toronto versus Florida. Toronto won the season series 3-0-1. Florida won 1-2. You know, it's been 19 years since Toronto played a second round series. I think I saw that the iPhone wasn't even out the last time Toronto played a second round series. So, you know, they were shooting off fireworks the other day and parading around and having a real grand time over there. But, you know, what do they say? That, you know, act like you've scored before, act like you've won before, right? So, you know, I know the players are composed. They've got game changers. I think Ryan O'Reilly was one of the best pickups, you know, after, you know, Matthias Ekholm for the Oilers. You know, he scored a couple big goals for them. And then you've got the big four, Austin Matthews, Tavares, Marner, and Nylander. I mean, it's going to be a big series, but those forwards have to show up, and Toronto's going to have to really buckle it down defensively, because if they let in that many goals, I mean, it's going to be tough. But if they can, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but I have the Leafs in 6 games in this one.
Jeez. The Toronto media is probably just loving this, eh? Like, the Maple Leafs are going to win the cup and all this. And I remember the Toronto media just in general annoys me, because they just feel like they're entitled to everything. Like, I remember, I think you told me this, but when McDavid got drafted to the Oilers, some writer from the Toronto Star or something like that it was like, we should have got McDavid. He doesn't need to. Stuff like that, right? So
they were suggesting that they should have just been given McDavid, because it's, you know, the mecca of hockey. It's the universe. They make all the money and this and that. But, you know, it's craziness. But honestly, I hate to see it, but I think the Leafs almost have a clear path to Stanley Cup, you know, because now it's,
jeez.
Like, I mean, yeah. The Leafs could get through Florida, and then, you know, we'll talk about the series in a bit, but, you know, and then the winner of Carolina versus New Jersey, like, I mean, how do you not take the Leafs against that? Like, it is crazy. And I'll be honest with you, the reason why I've got Toronto, Florida's penalty kill was absolutely atrocious versus Boston. You know, it was just under 60%. They allowed 11 goals on 27 power plays. And if Toronto, you know, if they can get it together, and Florida's not the most disciplined team, you know, out there either. So, you know, it's going to come down to the big guys scoring big goals. And if they can just shut it down a little bit defensively, you know, I think they'll be able to take it. And here's the funny thing too, is Florida announced that they're only selling tickets to U.S. residents because they don't want their arena turning into
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know what's funny about that?
That's exactly what would happen. Yeah.
Totally. When the last time I went to Miami was in 2019, second last time I went to Miami, we actually went to an NHL game, and guess who they were playing? The Panthers were playing the Leafs. There was maybe 5,000 people in the stands. Yeah. And I was blown away. I was like, this is Matthews. This is the biggest hockey. And there was nobody down there. I bet you they're going to sell it out now. Because although there's the beach and, you know, it's South Beach and everyone's kind of playoff hockey, man. And we got the Maple Leafs coming to town. So they must be like on their heels thinking about like, hey, we could have a chance to make it all the way. But I'm with you, man. I think Toronto has a clear shot to the finals if it can get past New Jersey here. So what is going on with, you know, I don't know much about the Carolina Islanders series. So we don't have to comment too much on that. I'm sure that the listeners don't know too much about that unless there's anything you want to chime in on quickly for them.
Well, I think you covered it just by saying exactly what you just said. I mean, that was boring hockey. Carolina and the Islanders that's how you win those games. But it's just, you know, very sound defensively. You're waiting for the other team to make a mistake and you try and jump on it. But, you know, this series, I think, is going to be interesting. You know, you've got New Jersey. They finished second in the Metro. Carolina finished first. Season record. New Jersey won that one. I guess it was kind of split. But, you know, they went 2-1-1. Carolina went 1-2-1. So, I mean, really not that much separation. But Carolina's going this thing with a few injuries. You know, they don't have a ton of big names. Sebastian Aho, I mean, he's going to be great. Brent Burns. Stefan Noason, Seth Jarvis, Paul Stasty. Those are all guys that are going to have to step up big. But, you know, they've lost Andrei Shestakov. I can't even pronounce his name. And Pacioretty, who they got from Vegas for essentially nothing. Yeah. I mean, those were two big names you were going to really rely on in a playoff run for big goals. So now you don't have that. And you've got New Jersey, who's just like firing on all cylinders. You know, you've got Jack Hughes, who had 99 points this year, Nico Hersher, 90 points, Dougie Hamilton, a defenseman, 74 points, including 22 goals, which was the second best among all defensemen, you know, Jesper Bratt, Andre Palat, and, you know, Timo Meier was a great pickup from San Jose. Hopefully he can step up a little bit, but I've got New Jersey in five games in this one. I just don't see Carolina being able to, you know, slow down New Jersey, especially after what they just did, you know, against the New York Rangers, which I know the Devils had finished higher than the Rangers, but to me, it still felt like it was almost an upset because the Rangers had gone out. They went and got, you know, Patrick Kane. They went and got Tarasenko. You know, they made a lot of big moves to try and build up for this big, deep playoff run, and it just completely fell apart.
Yeah, I mean, New York, they looked impressive all year. They have those big defensemen, and that first overall pick they had is not necessarily like blowing the doors off. Like he's a serviceable player, that did that French guy they picked up. But yeah, he's like whatever, but he's not like a game breaker. I think that it's going to be interesting for them. Yeah. Lafreniere, yeah, that's right. So, okay, let's make predictions here. Conference finals and then Stanley Cup finals. So I think based on this whole discussion, you got Dallas going against Edmonton in the West for the finals, projecting ahead. And then in the East, you got the Maple Leafs versus the New Jersey Devils. So let's say, what are the predictions you're going to make for the conference finals? And then we'll go to the Stanley Cup finals.
Yeah, so if we end up getting those two matchups, which I just want to say, this whole New Jersey thing is pretty funny because I don't know if you remember at the beginning of the year, they were all chanting fire Lindy Ruff. They had a really tough start. You know, they wanted their coach fired after, I think it was like four games or something really just ridiculous like that. Now, yeah. You know, they're going to the second round, which is just crazy. But, you know, I think if we end up getting the matchups of, you know, hypothetically, if it was Dallas versus Edmonton. Now, Dallas and Edmonton have a deep history, too. I mean, dating back to the 90s and the early 2000s where Dallas
Medano, was had Doug Wade. Oh, yeah.
Lankin Bruner, you know, Darian Hatcher, Ed Belfour, you know.
I remember those. I used to watch those games, man.
Those were fun games. You know, that was a fun team to watch. But, you know, I think this would be a little bit different. You know, I'm not trying to be an Edmonton homer, but I think Edmonton could take care of business there in six. You know, and then if we went out east to Toronto versus New Jersey, that's a tough one. And, you know, but it's, you know, to me that the difference maker is this rookie goaltender that New Jersey has, this Akira Schmid who came in, you know, after they were down 2-0 in the series against New York and just completely saved the season for them. He went 4-1 in the last five games. I mean, to me, I take him over Samsonov and, you know, yeah. This one's a coin toss, but just for the sake of it, you know, I'm going to go Toronto in seven, just to be consistent, wow. But I wouldn't be surprised if New Jersey could take out Toronto, but that sounds so crazy to think of like an all Canadian final when the Canadian team hasn't won the Stanley Cup since 1993, but you know, Edmonton, Toronto, what a final that would be. Matthews versus McDavid.
Unreal.
You know, I couldn't even imagine Sportsnet media, you know, what would take place over there. Yeah.
They'd be 24 hours coverage.
Yeah. Jeff O'Neill's head might just explode like live on air.
Yeah.
O dog is what they call him. Yeah.
The O dog. Yeah. They would be able to handle that, man. The hockey, those are the two biggest hockey markets or two of the biggest hockey markets in the world. So I'd love to see that. I think we'd all be here for it. But that happens, we cannot lose to Toronto. There's cannot happen. We'll never hear the end of it until we're gray. Right. Like that's just going to be terrible. So
what are your thoughts?
I got, I think you could tell by my excitement. I got Edmonton going all the way, but I think I got Edmonton beating Dallas. Probably seven games. I got Edmonton beating Toronto in six games. I think we just handle Toronto, to be honest with you. Like, I think it's just a matter of that momentum going into the final. And yeah, they got forwards, but we got better forwards. If like strength on strength, you know, what's the dividing factor is like we got slightly better forwards and better defensemen. Maybe the goalies are kind of even. If not, Toronto has the edge on that. But listen, we got more firepower, man. Like, just like when everyone's clicking, we just can score too many goals. And I think that we're just going to overwhelm teams. Like if LA is one of the better defensive teams in the league, we just handled them. As soon as we got our shit figured out, we stopped taking dumb penalties. I mean, the only thing we have to worry about in Edmonton now is just people making sure they don't get trampled in the moss pit. But outside of that, we're going
to
be all right.
The moss pit, yeah. I got to come up to the moss pit. If we go deep, I'm coming up. Definitely coming up.
Yeah, just bring a freaking helmet and some PPE. Shit's going down.
Throwing my hockey equipment. I saw you sent me a video. It was pretty crazy, man. These guys are wild, but it's fun. I will say, being from Edmonton, and, you know, we'll always say Edmonton's city champions. No better place to grow up. It is so much fun seeing that team and that city alive, and just all the excitement. And I remember in 2006, you know, every building had an Oilers flag, cars had the flags, everyone's wearing their jerseys. And it was just the coolest thing as a kid, and kind of see that again with this beautiful new arena in the district, and, you know, warm weather watching hockey. I mean, and then just flooding out to downtown. I mean, there's nothing better than that. It's just the coolest thing.
The city's coming up, man. I mean, Edmonton is on a wave, and it is nothing, like, you're right, there's nothing better than it. And when we were coming up at that time, we weren't able to drink yet, but White House can be wild. Like, not that we're going to go get wasted, but it's going to turn into Gotham City when we win, and I'll be out on the streets, you can guarantee it.
And no shade to the Calgary Flames, but, you know, I mean, I'm glad. It's good that they're getting the arena. You know, I'm happy for them.
And that's for sure going down?
Yeah. So they were able to make a deal. Danielle Smith changed, because it's funny, because she didn't believe in provincial funding for an arena, but, you know, but this has nothing to do with an upcoming election at King. So stop thinking that right now. You stop that, okay? But the province is going to give $300 million. Nothing to do with the upcoming election and a battleground that needs to be won in Calgary. Don't even think that. It has nothing to do with it, all right? Stop thinking it. But yeah, I'm happy for them. They're getting their arena, you know, and but interesting. I mean, Daryl Sutter fired today. Their general manager stepped away.
Really?
There's a whole line of guys that it sounds like they were ready to just leave. If Daryl Sutter was going to continue to be coach, they said, get me out of here. And the rumor was among NHL agents was, do not send your players to Calgary, because it is a nightmare plan for him and for that team.
Wow. You know, Alberta Farmer turned hockey legend, but he was able to coach him pretty good last year, but I could see he looks like a bit of like a hard ass. So I would imagine he's a bit of a brute to play for. No, but
he's just that type of guy.
They're going to have to get a high draft pick, maybe Bedard or something like that, if they want to maybe get this going. Could you imagine like an interprovincial playoff where Bedard and McDavid just go head to head?
I mean,
that would be three times a year.
I don't even know. Yeah, I mean, that's such a – I don't even know if they even have a chance of getting him. But if that would be a really cool thing. I mean, having a rivalry with two superstars, you know, that was the first thing I thought of when Eichel went to Vegas. And I mean, Eichel's not, you know – if McDavid's a 1A, you know, Eichel's a 1B or C. I mean, they're completely two different categories, but it's fun. It's fun having, you know, that manpower. But people, you know, we got Leon Draisaitl not long behind. You know, we got a deep team, so I'm not worried about them. They can build their fancy arena and build their nice little sidewalks and have a good time. And, you know, the Stampede's a great time, and I love Country Thunder. And, you know, to me, if it's good for Calgary, it's good for Edmonton, it's good for the province. And
totally,
you know, that's what it's all about. So I'm happy for them.
By extension, I'm an Alberta homer as well, man. I love the whole province. Country music, pickup trucks, country music, steaks. You know how it goes, right? Mountain Banff, Country Thunder, BVJ, everything. 60 what?
68% of oil in the U.S. comes from Canada. So I remind them down here, you know, I might be in Silicon Valley for tech, but we were in the Silicon Valley of oil for a long time. So,
hey, man, land of milk and honey, man, land of milk and honey. Speaking of Silicon Valley, man, let's change gears and talk about business here, because people out there might not know. People out there might think that Brendan Béliveau is the healthcare guy. He's the guy who got his degree in nursing, went down to the States, works at a top tier hospital, as an RN, but many people out there might not realize this, and we didn't really touch on this too much in the last pod, but in the course of the pandemic, you've become like a junior Warren Buffett. You become a valued investor and store extraordinaire. And I would just love to give the people out there a peek into the knowledge that you have that I've been able to glean from you so luckily over the phone calls we've had over the last year, just about your approach to the market, kind of where this all came from for you, your just kind of your mentality when it comes to like investing, looking at the markets, looking at business, like kind of where did this come from, and kind of what is your approach like these days?
Well, you know, that's you know, quite the introduction to that. And I really appreciate it. Honestly, you know, what happened was I remember sitting and hearing about my parents talk about 2008 when that happened, and, you know, watching the news and, you know, hearing about, I don't even know what the stock market really was. And I should have at that time. I wish they would have taught us that in school, but just knowing a lot of people lost a lot of money and Ford went down to nothing and then it picked up after, and just thinking, okay, like, wow, like, you know, a lot of people lost all their money, but, you know, some people made some money. And then I remember going through 2014, still not really knowing much about the stock market or anything like that, you know, a bit less of a downturn, but still the same thing. And then 2020 hit and COVID and everything just came crashing down. And, you know, I was dating someone at the time out in Sacramento. And I remember we were with a few friends and, you know, they were all like having fun, wanting to go out drinks. I'm like, what are these guys doing? She's like, well, they don't work right now. I was like, why? What, you know, how do they, they're like in their late 30s, early 40s. Oh yeah, they did really well, you know, when the market crashed and they bought a bunch of stocks. Now they don't work. I'm like, what? This is crazy. And then I was like, man, I really got to start learning about this, because it seems like whenever there's these downturns, you know, while a lot of people are they all of a sudden get very bearish and pull up their money and are very fearful, there's a lot of opportunity in these moments. And, you know, I wanted to take some time to kind of learn. And I just, you know, literally, I mean, I bought you the book too, you know.
Common Sense Investing.
You know, some of Warren Buffett's, you know, wisdom, and sort of just doing a lot of research and watching a lot of YouTube videos, you know, reading up on a lot of different sites and trying to just kind of put together a lot of information that I could on investing. And I thought, okay, like, this is, you know, I can't miss the next one. And very fortunately, you know, I was glad I took that time and I didn't start, because in 2021, you know, things kind of came, they shot right back up and everyone did really, really well. And then things really came tumbling down again in 2022. And all I could think about was, man, I'm so glad I didn't start in 2021. I mean, I still will always say there's the best time to start investing is always right now. But, you know, I was like, okay, when it hit rock bottom again, you know, in October 2022 was like, you know, the real bottom of I think this current, you know, post-COVID hangover recession, whatever you want to call it. I just said, there's no way I can't start jumping in and buying up some of these good companies at discounts. It makes no sense.
Do you think, I mean, like, yeah, I like your quote there, but you ever heard the one about the tree where it's like the best time to plant the tree was 10 years ago, but if you didn't plant one 10 years ago, the best time is now. And,
I love it.
So when it comes to stocks, it's the same mentality, right? Like it may not be a dip or sorry, it may not be a bull market or a bear market or whatever the market is. If you think about investing, the best way to learn is to actively do it. And that's what I've been so impressed with you by, is like, you don't have a BCom, you didn't go to some fancy investment course or work on Wall Street for 2 or 3 years as a junior analyst, because that's really what you're doing. You're being an analyst day to day. You're learning how all this stuff works. You're reading P&Ls, you're reading all this stuff. You're kind of making your deductions. Like you mentioned 2001 being a bull time. I remember you telling me on the phone one time, like, Hakeem, you know why it was a bull market for stocks? It's because everyone was sitting at home. So of course the stock market, the stocks for these tech companies are going to be up because everyone is in their house. So they have to, tech is leveraged right now, right? Like look at Netflix, look at what was that video conferencing app? I've already forgot about it. Zoom, their stock climbed. Netflix's stock climbed. Disney stock climbed because everyone couldn't leave their house. Now they can.
This is the crazy thing. I was living in downtown San Jose at the time, 5 minutes away from Zoom headquarters. And I remember just thinking, wow, I bet they're going to be the busiest company. And then what did the stock do? It just completely shot up. And it was like, man, like someone at work I talked to was like, I took out a $50,000 loan. And I never recommend taking out debt to invest. I think that's, you know, a very dangerous game, but they took out 50 grand, invested it and flipped it into, I think it was like 450 grand or something like that.
Wow. So
that one panned out, but I mean, it could go to zero and then, you know, you're in big trouble. But it was just like, you know, having the insight to see, okay, like what does the future hold? Like what is going to happen? But, you know, to me, there's always different rules. And you know, a lot of people, I've met some really, you know, awesome people down here, and it's half of the time, it's just luck of the draw. You know, like I have shared with you, I've met some people who, you know, one individual I know, you know, he's, you know, almost has a million deep in Tesla and knows Elon Musk. And he's just like, the, you know, buy this. I'm like, okay, like this guy's, you know, he's doing this. He knows Elon, like, you know, it's like, okay, like I gotta listen to these people who have done it. And I was like, you know, where did you get your money? You know, how did you do this? And this guy, I mean, it's like six Porsches living, you know, he's got places in Palm Springs everywhere. And he's like, Amazon and Tesla, you know, a long time ago. And I just kept adding. And I'm like, man, he's like, you know what? Like Tesla was, you know, based out of the Bay Area. You started seeing these vehicles come around. There's nothing quite like it. And you have this vision of like seeing, you know, what's going on. And one of the coolest lessons for me was like, you know, if you ever think about investing in a company, like go to one of their stores, go take a look at what's inside. You know, if you think about investing in Apple, I mean, go walk down to, you know, the Apple store, see what's going on, see how busy it is, see, you know, what's going on. I mean, you know, a lot of people look at the GameStop situation. There's a big documentary on it, but yeah, a lot of people, you know, saw images of some of these stores that were a little emptied out, but a lot of people, you know, were able to kind of, they saw the short interest and were able to kind of turn that around. But, you know, for me anyways, I don't do options. I don't short stocks. I don't do any of that stuff. Maybe at some point down the road, but I feel like you got to have a really strong foundation first. For me, like the biggest lessons, it's just buying really good companies that have, you know, positive balance sheets that are going to be around for a long time. You know, if they sell a product or service, those are the best ones, you know. And I love the Warren Buffett stocks too. Warren Buffett has always loved companies, you know, that have factories with a smokestack that build something, they sell it, you know. And so, you know, his biggest play is, you know, Apple's is his biggest holding, you know, but Coca-Cola is a really interesting one for him too.
Yeah.
You know, I think his play in Coca-Cola, I think he's invested about $1 billion into it, you know, over a long period of time. And he gets, it's around $750 million a year in dividends. I mean, you're getting almost your initial investment back in dividends every single year. It's crazy, you know, but here's the thing too. Day traders often lose. And, you know, a lot of these people who think that they can get ahead of the market and, you know, there's just so much technology now, you know, and a lot of this technology, you'll see these guys with like 5-6 monitors, you know, paying $20,000 a year for the software and picking up on little like AI algorithms. And, you know, that's so far above me, but for the average investor, you know, it's a long-term game. You want to buy companies at good prices and hold them for a long time. You know, if you hold a stock for 10 years, the number is, it's about, what did I have? It's about 94% of the time, if you hold a company for 10 years, that it's going to turn a profit. And over 20 years, it's closer to 100% of the time. Now there's companies that will go under and you have to continue to watch these things. But the moral of the story is, you know, the longer you hold a good company, the better the outcome often is, you know, but it's super interesting and figuring out little things too. And you and I have talked as well, you know, even about, you know, the PE, you know, looking at that number, price to earnings, you know, 10 to 20 yeah. is an attractive number to me. Some sectors will be a little bit more expensive. You know, tech often trades at, you know, greater than 20 times earnings. And, you know, sectors like energy, you have to often trade below 10, and banking sometimes is, you know, 10 to 15. So if you see a tech company trading at 400 times earnings, you know, either they have a really great product coming out that people are very, you know, excited about, or the future is very optimistic, or something's not quite right with this company. And that's probably a red flag that you should stay away. But it's super interesting. I think that we're kind of moving from a bear to a bull market pretty soon. We've had 9 straight rate hikes. You know, 3 large banks have just failed. JP Morgan Chase just won a bid, you know, for First Republic's assets. And that stock went down to absolutely nothing. So everyone who owned a First Republic stock you're down to zero right now, which, you know, I mean, you got to research these companies. For a long time, people who had been withdrawing their cash, $100 billion last year, you know, it's really tough. But I think the banking, the finance crisis situation is kind of behind us. I think we're going to finally kind of move forward. And it's going to be interesting to kind of see. But, you know, I'm excited for it. And I know you've started investing a little bit too, and you've done quite well.
100%, man. Not as good as you, because that's why I'm interviewing right now, because I'm very impressed by like what you've been able to do, your analysis, your approach to the market. You pulled on a few strings there that I'd like to kind of untangle. I like what you said there about just kind of the 5 and 10 year and 15 long-term investing, where it's like, less based on behaviors and reactions to the market and more based on kind of a long-term approach. I remember Warren Buffett famously made some bet with some guy some private equity guy or some traditional investment firm about like picking stocks versus just investing in a regular index fund and who would win at the end. And I think Warren Buffett ended up winning because it just ended up outperforming the stock picker, like you said, the day trader. And I think over like a 100-year time horizon, the market gives you back 7% if you just pick an index or something like that. Or it's like it averages at 7% returns. So that's the first thing. But you also touched on like the regulatory environment, the economic environment, kind of all these different things that impact companies' valuations. You mentioned to me a long time ago about buying the dip. Can you touch a little bit about what that means and what if that dip is still happening and kind of how that impacts your decision making?
Yeah, I think the dip is definitely still there. And now, I think since platforms like Robinhood and some of these other ones have come out, and the pandemic was probably one of the biggest reasons why I think we have so many people investing in moving markets. And you've got Wall Street Bets who, you know, for fun, I love just checking out their Reddit feed and seeing what they do, because like it or not, you know, they have the power to kind of move markets in one way or another. You've seen it with, you know, GameStop was the big one, AMC, Bed Bath & Beyond, you know, a lot of these ones, they were able to, you know, kind of get together and completely move stock prices, which is wild. But you're seeing a lot of macroeconomic factors that are changing the value of stocks, regardless of whether the company is doing good or bad. Like a lot of things don't often make sense. And I think when you can kind of identify, you know, a low stock price, but a company doing good, and there's some sort of degree of separation, and you can tell yourself, this just doesn't make sense. You know, like why, for example, is Meta so low? You know, they have a really strong balance sheet. They, you know, next to no debt, they've got tons of cash, free cash flow. You know, they're still going to make a lot of money on advertising. We've got other factors like, you know, the war in Russia and Ukraine. You know, we're still kind of got this COVID hangover. You know, China at the time was still, you know, kind of lifting a lot of restrictions as well. And a lot of different, you know, economic factors going on, but it just didn't make sense. And now you look, today Meta hit another 52-week high. You know, a lot of people were able to flip 100% profit, you know, over the last few months because they were able to see. And, you know, some credit goes to Mark Zuckerberg for being able to identify like, okay, we've got to pivot a lot of our focus and investment away from the metaverse and back into advertising. Mm-hmm. You know, how are we competing with TikTok? You know, are we looking at our Instagram reels and things like that too? And, you know, they've done a great job, but there's often a big, you know, degree of separation from, you know, where a company is and where it should be. You know, one that I identified that I was very proud of was, you know, I was very fortunate to be working a night shift when the banks completely collapsed and Western Alliance, you know, had tumbled. And I was looking at the numbers like in the pre-market and it was falling faster than it did in 2008. And I just thought, this is absolutely crazy. And I went and looked. I know there's been withdrawals and, you know, there's issues in the sector, but to me, it just didn't make, you know, sense at all, you know? And I was like, I got to get in. And this might sound crazy, but it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, hours later, luckily, you know, things had recovered and shot back up, but, you know, it's identifying those things, but, you know, that was definitely a little more of a risky play, but buying good companies in the dip, you can see their charts and, you know, with rate hikes, you know, basically what this rate hike situation does is it makes borrowing money more expensive. And so what right. does that hurt? It hurts equities, it hurts stocks. So, you know, once rates start coming down and money is cheaper for a lot of these companies to go out and borrow cash and invest in other things, you know, that's going to be a lot more power for these companies. It's going to be cheaper, you know, to access money or cheaper to invest in different areas too. So, you know, you're being gifted even right now with companies that are basically handcuffed in a lot of ways. You know, you're buying today's prices. And once, you know, we start loosening the leash a little bit or unlocking those handcuffs one hand at a time, you know, I mean, some of these companies might end up just taking off. Not everyone, you know, some of them have proved to be quite resilient, but, you know, it's interesting. A lot of people want to look at the winners. You know, in 2023, services is up 18%, tech is up 10%, capital goods 7%. But I love to look at you know, also the losers as well too, right? As a whole, energy is down 4%, finance is down 3% as well too. So to me, you know, if you've got good companies that are down a little bit and just doesn't make sense, you know, those are great buying opportunities right now too. I'll give you a stock that I really like, you know, for example, Enbridge, you know,
Enbridge.
Yeah. Energy. You know, they move 20% of North America's, you know, energy every single day, you know, and there's not a lot of new
pipelines projects. Being made.
Yeah. None. Right. Mm-hmm. So the existing ones have what it takes. And Enbridge, for example, has, you know, the capabilities. They could fuel all of Europe with LNG if they were able to get another pipeline built too. But, you know, they're very cyclical too, but you're buying at almost a 52-week low with a dividend of about 6.5%. Some people love dividends, right? Some people want to get rewarded as a shareholder. Other people don't. You know, I know people that don't want dividends. They want companies that take that money and either do, stock buybacks or just use that money to invest in the company into other technologies. A lot of tech companies don't do dividends because, you know, Google, for example, would rather use that money and invest in other things as well too, right? I mean, Alphabet, I guess, is the name. They own Google, Fitbit, YouTube, a bunch of other companies as well too. So it's very interesting, but, you know, there's a lot of really good companies that you can buy at good prices. A lot of times it doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you looked at the whole COVID situation, a lot of them, it didn't make sense why they went down as quickly as it did, but it's being driven by investor fears and speculations rather than actual, you know, fundamentals of how a company's performing and what they're doing.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the dip. Just to clarify for the folks out there who aren't super financially acute, that just means like undervalued stock, right?
Big time. Yeah. I mean, you can look at a chart, a 52-week high, 52-week low, look at the range. You know, to me, if you're sitting at a 52-week low, but it's trading at 40 times earnings, you know, for a lot of companies, that might just be a really negative, you know, red flag. But if it's trading at, you know, a 52-week low, you know, it's got a really strong balance sheet. It's trading at, you know, 10 times earnings, and, you know, it just doesn't make sense, you know, and they're a large cap company, you know, maybe it could be a really good opportunity to kind of jump into something like that.
So the effective way of saying this is like a lot of these really high, really well-run, really well-managed companies have market conditions that are causing their valuation to drop, and it's effectively discounted. So if you're an investor, you're buying this piece of a company at a discount. It's like buying, it's like if Apple was selling, like in the retail space, it's like, correct me if I'm wrong, Brennan, but it'd be like if Apple iPhones were suddenly 20% off, and there was no kind of rhyme or reason for it. And you knew that you could sell the Apple iPhone in like a year's time for, you know, 20% more, 50%, like it's just a discounted, it's like a discounted item. And it sounds like this last 6 to 9 months, like you've mentioned to me a few times, like Akeem, this is like a once in a decade opportunity when it comes to some of these discounted stocks dips that we're going to see. And, you know, it is these kind of times and these seasons where if you go in hard, you can really set yourself up well, like those people in Sacramento you were mentioning. So,
yeah.
You've noticed that, eh? And are we coming out of that? Like, I've also heard things about a recession. Like, what's your kind of read on the market right now?
I think we've been in a recession. I mean, the traditional definition of recession was two negative quarters of negative, you know, GDP growth. So, I mean, call it what you want. You can change the definition of anything, you know, and it still is what it is. We've been in this really tough downturn, and Jay Powell and the Fed are trying to, you know, really slow down wage growth. They want to slow down jobs. They want to slow down a lot of the stuff and keep, you know, inflation under control. But, you know, there's still some work to do. I think, you know, we're winning the battle, but, you know, it's super interesting, but a lot of things are working against these companies. But again, when you talk about the dip, I mean, when we first started talking about Apple, for example, I mean, I think when we talked about it, Apple was at, you know, $126. Today it was at $170. You know, this was just a few months ago. I mean, you know, again, would you rather, you know, buy something on sale or pay full price for it, you know, for the exact same thing? You know, it doesn't make any sense. But in my head, you know, there's a lot of good companies, and you know what? There's thousands of companies you can invest in, you know, and everyone needs to make their own informed decisions, and you should be buying things that you are, you know, well informed of. You know, a lot of people end up buying things that they, you know, products and services that they use, right? I mean, you know, yeah, what Coca-Cola delivers, you know, if you're from Alberta, you garbage, probably know about Enbridge, you know about these companies. You know, one ETF that I love is it's called ZWB.TO. That's the ticker. It's an ETF. They do covered calls, options, but it's made up of a lot of the big Canadian banks. You know, which are very well regulated, and it offers about a 7% dividend, you know. And in my head, I'm like, you know, I could buy this $50 sushi dinner right now, or I could buy, you know, this ETF, which is trading at just above $18, you know, and it's going to give me a 12% dividend every month, you know, for as long as I hold it, and it's likely to go up, you know. And that's another thing too, is when you're looking at companies with dividends, is you want to see what, you know, is it sustainable for that company? You know, if someone has a really high dividend yield, you know, it's that you have to really investigate it, right? If a company had a dividend yield of 10%, there's a number of things that could be going on. It could be that the company's not doing well, you know, and the stock price has dropped, and hence why the yield price is high, or, you know, people are very, you know, bearish on it, and it's the market's dropped, and it's just a tough time. But if you look at the payout ratio or the payout rate, that's kind of the big thing. And if the payout rate is 60% or lower, it's usually a sign that a dividend is sustainable. And, you know, Enbridge pays a pretty generous dividend. You know, and you listen to these calls, you know, and you check out the investor meetings, and, you know, their CEO has said not only they're going to maintain the dividend, but they're going to continue to raise it over time as well too. So, you know, those are all good factors, and they actually report their earnings, you know, over the next few days as well too. So those are things that I'll be listening to quite closely. But again, it's a long-term game. You can't get emotional, and you buy good companies.
Huge.
You hold them for a long time, and you drip that dividend back too. And so what drip means is simply, rather than take the dividend payout, you know, and go, you know, to, you know, Lululemon or whatever, you know, I don't know what you like to do on your Friday nights or whatever like that, but
protect, you know, the city of Gotham for sure.
Protect the city. Yeah, I'm just teasing, but you put that money right back and you reinvest it, you know, and you can set this up in your actual accounts as well too. So I like to drip the dividends, you know, and then every month that dividend payout gets a little bit bigger, 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 and eventually it just exponentially takes off. You pretend that money's not even there.
Reinvest it, right? I love that. And that sounds so bomb, by the way, drip the dividend. That just sounds like something the Migos would say.
You know, I was going to say Migos song, yeah. Drip the dividend.
Drip the dividend, man. Hotel lobby. That's what's up. Wagwan. Mama. All right, RIP takeoff. But what was I going to say? Oh yeah. So do you do a lot of like scanning of the news? Because I imagine the social politically, you mentioned the Ukraine war, all these things. But since November, since I last came there, you've had the FTX scandal. You've had the Silicon Valley Bank failing, and now you have all these tech and finance layoffs to the tune of like 6% of some headcounts of some of these companies, which are 100,000 person companies just being axed. And then obviously this new AI disruption that's been taking over the world and seems to be reiterating itself every 2 weeks, where it's like ChatGPT, now there's ChatGPT-4, now there's AutoGPT, now there's ChaosGPT. Like, there's just so many things happening. How do you take this all in? And as a casual investor who's got like a day job, who is paying attention, like this is hundreds of thousands of dollars we could be talking about potentially. How do you scan that whole environment, process it, and then make decisions off it?
Yeah. I mean, you got to stay up to date, because these things, you know, play out and really impact things. So I, you know, personally, I love Yahoo Finance. I love MarketWatch. Those are kind of the two big places that I get a lot of my news from. You know, say what you want, people like or don't like Jim Cramer, but I still, you know, we'll take neutral, you know, information as much as I can from what he says, you know, based on how earnings are going. But, you know, I don't take recommendations without doing my own research and things like that too. But it is super interesting. And when you're seeing a lot of the tech layoffs, here's the thing is people love efficiency. And if you look at Mark Zuckerberg and Meta, for example, you know, with their layoffs, every time they announce layoffs, the stock price just soars and continues to go to the moon, because, you know, everyone's looking at how much money are you making per employee that you have. You know, people have said if Amazon were to lay off, you know, 50 to 100,000 employees, you know, that stock price, you know, it might go to $150 right now. Like they want to see these companies get more efficient. A lot of people think that there was too much hiring over the pandemic, and you know, the demand has not kept up with it. So, you know, it is super interesting, but I feel like very fortunate to be in Silicon Valley, because you're hearing a lot of these things, you know, very quickly. Right. You're seeing what's going on. I mean, staying up to date with the news is big. I mean, you know, I was looking today too, that there was an EV company where one of their partner companies said that they might pull out of a deal. And they said, you know, that might put them in bankruptcy territory, and their stock dropped 30%. Can you imagine having $1 million and something like that, losing 300 grand, you know, just like that. So, you know, you want to really stay ahead, but you know, a lot of these apps, you can set stock alerts, you know, price alerts, you know, depending on if they go up or down, you know, 5-10%, whatever, or if there's any big news you want to know about earnings. But these are all good things, but you want to see where the trend is going too, right? I mean, you know, companies that have proven themselves, but again, at the end of the day, and Warren Buffett would say this himself, is you want to buy good companies that are, you know, profitable and going to be around for a long time. And, you know, if you look at his portfolio, it's Apple, it's Coca-Cola, it's Kraft. It's a lot of those types of companies that, you know, are consistent, you know, they can adapt, and, you know, there's a lot of consumer loyalty, you know, among them, you know, and there's still growth potential too. It's, you know, at the end of the day, again, you can pick different sectors, you can pick different stocks. For me, I'm not going to be the riskiest person. If I see a really bold opportunity, I'll take it. But for the, you know, 85 to 90% of the portfolio, it's going to be in these good companies that I know are going to be around, you know, some of which pay a dividend, some of them don't, because, you know, I want those stocks to just grow. I'm, you know, try and be diversified as much as you can. You know, I personally, when finance started going down, you know, people pulled out their money and got bearish, and I was like, this is an opportunity. You know, I am going to take some Charles Schwab at a discount. I am going to, you know, news is coming out that TD is the most shorted bank in North America. You know, okay, sure. Drop the stock price. I'll take that. Cause you know, TD is not going anywhere, you know, so you just take advantage of those opportunities, right? You know, oil goes down, you know, natural gas goes down, and Enbridge hits a 52-week low. Thank you very much. Okay, I'll buy this at a discount. There was one individual I was listening to who bought some Chevron, and he bought it shortly after the 2020 dip. And, you know, I can't remember what their dividend payout is right now. Might be like 4 or 5%, something like that. That might even be a little bit high. But he's sitting at about a 12% yield because of the price that he got in at. And he's like, should I sell the stock? I'm like, you're getting a 12% dividend on one of the, you know, some people argue Chevron or ExxonMobil, you know, either of those two companies are two of the best energy companies in the world. Why would you ever give that up? You're getting a 12% return. You go to your local bank and say, hey, I'd like to open an account and get a 12% return every year. You know, they'll close the door on you. You know, they'll think you're trying to rob the place. Yeah. So
12%. Yeah. Are you smoking? What are you smoking there, bud? Man, yeah. You mentioned about being the proximity to Silicon Valley. Tell us about, since we last interviewed you, we did the interview in San Francisco in the Bay, beautiful backdrop there with some big boats in the harbor there. What's life like in San Francisco for you these days?
Man, I love it here. You know, things are opening up. We had, you know, some crazy rain over the winter. So that was just more motivation and time to kind of do a lot more research. But you know, with the good weather, you know, coming out of the recession, it's a great city. You know, every city has areas that they can improve upon, but I mean, you know, it's hard to not just get inspired and motivated around here. You know, like I said today, I sent you that picture of Twitter headquarters. You know, you're driving by and through all these places that a lot of the big decisions and what is happening across the entire world is happening right here.
Crazy.
You know, it can be a challenging environment. If you're looking for the friendliest and kind of most laid back place, this is definitely not the place for you. But if you're looking to, you know, really get out there and roll up the sleeves and try and build something, I mean, Silicon Valley is not a place for laziness by any means. You gotta work hard, you know, or, you know, you'll be out pretty quick. I mean, even no matter what sector you're in, you know, tech, healthcare, whatever. I mean, if you're not pulling your weight, you know, it's an expensive place to live, and you gotta be working hard to do it. And I think that's why there's so many people that are innovative and creative down here. You know, one, because your back is sometimes against the wall and you're saying, hey, you know, how am I going to keep up with these rent prices and this and that? And it's like, I got to start a side hustle. I got to think of other ways to do this. So, you know, while there might be some challenging moments, you know, at the end of the day, it might actually be, you know, some of those moments might be the best things to ever happen to you. But, you know, I truly love it here. And I hope that someday, you know, you're able to spend some more time down here. But you know, it's tough to beat the ocean. And again, so, you know, a lot of the opportunities here, driving down to LA, you know, we've got the Lakers and the Warriors, you know, playing round two coming up. You know, Giants baseball by the water. It's such a great area. I know there's a million phenomenal areas, but you know, this is definitely the place for me right now. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say, you know, when you'll be down here sometime this summer, we'll go to a country concert outside and, you know, people are surprised, but they like their country music down here.
Tell me about that country music, man. What's on the playlist these days? Morgan Wallen, Luke Combs, like, what are we talking about?
Yeah. You know, hey, I'm glad we got you into country a little bit too. I remember we took you to Big Valley a few years ago and, you know, maybe a little frightened at the gate, but you know, Florida Georgia Line eased those concerns and, it was a lot of fun, man. But yeah, we're going to Sam Hunton in August down here in Silicon Valley, man. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, man, you know, you got the throwbacks too. I was listening to some Garth Brooks and George Strait, you know, the other day as well too. He played some little Kenny Chesney and, you know, just watch the sunset and, you know, take Nelly out for a drive or something like that. And, you know, we're just having a good time, man. There's nothing, you know, just the whole hey y'all thing. It's a great place to be, man.
Something about, the beauty of San Francisco, the Bay Area, you know, you got the big fog coming over the high level bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge.
The high level bridge.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's a little bit different, but.
Hey man, they're both iconic though.
Totally. In their own rights.
In their own rights, man.
But the Golden Gate Bridge and, you know, Baker Beach and all that stuff. And it's just Santa Cruz, like. There's something different about that city when it comes to like just the lifestyle and the imagery and stuff. And you mix that with a little bit of country, a little bit of give it all we got tonight, a little bit of, you know, it's Houston, talk we got a problem, it. Talk you yeah. out of it. Breaking up was easy in the 90s. Like, man, I mean, it's something about that country music though. Like to your point, man, you guys got me drinking that Kool-Aid a few years ago and I couldn't be happier with the outcome. Every time I flip it on, I'm in the truck, man. I'm a pickup man now. Every time I'm in the truck, flip on some country music, man. It just hits different, man. Hits the soul. Hits just like the butterfly start flapping.
Oh man, all you got to do is, and you just got to get a John Deere green tractor and
Jason Aldean.
Jason Aldean, take you for a ride. Green tractor.
We can go slow, or maybe go
faster.
I like the song "Night Train" by him. Let's go listen to the night. Train. It's like anyways, Jason Aldean's got some bangers. But yeah, man, I mean, this is it's all beautiful stuff. I can't believe I didn't like it before. You know, I've even got some of the brothers listen to the country, you know, you'd be surprised. And typically black guys don't listen to that, but you know, my dad loves country. You know, I think Jamaicans like country because there's a lot of country music in Jamaica, but yeah, I don't know.
It's just feel good stuff, man. You know, you can listen to it, you know, if you're happy, sad, you know, just met a girl, just broke up, you know, got dumped, whatever, man. It's just like, there's a country song for everything, man.
Totally, man.
You know, but it's fun. It's for everyone too, man. And I'm excited to get you down here. We'll have to go to Stagecoach, you know, right in Coachella Valley, basically country Coachella. We'll have to make that happen someday. And then Austin City Limits as well too. And Nashville.
100%, brother. Yeah, Broadway. We'll get it popping. Man, you are a very impressive individual, man. I look up to you a lot. One of the things that just happened with you that's extremely excited, I'm very proud of you for, is that you were recently invited to the University of McEwen alumni presentation or award ceremony. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, no, I'm really excited. I was very fortunate that was nominated and one of the recipients of the 2023 Distinguished Alumni Award winners as well too. So, you know, it's a huge honor and something that I'm very proud of. You know, to have gone to McEwen University and to have specifically taken the nursing program, and you know, with everything with starting my company and nursing immigration and moving down here, and you know, there's been a lot of challenges, but a lot of really cool rewarding moments. And you know, it's exciting having the opportunity to help people, you know, immigrate to Canada and the US, and you know, to help educate them and support them and to see a lot of their Canadian and American dreams come true. You know, we've got thousands kind of in the immigration pipeline right now, a lot that have already started, and you know, many, many more that you know, we're going to continue to help out. And
yeah,
it's very exciting, you know. And our agency, our headquarters is in Nashville. You've got an office in Manila in the Philippines, and you know, we're growing like crazy, and we're helping people, you know, from all over the world. And it's a real privilege and an honor. And, you know, I don't take any of this lightly, but yeah, again, there's so many incredible people who have graduated from McEwen, and, you know, just to be, you know, on that list and to be able to, you know, celebrate that night with, you know, the other recipients and family and friends, and, you know, I'm excited to have you there with me, and it's going to be a really special night this June, and
100%,
I'm excited, man. But yeah, it's very humbling and very exciting, and yeah, I mean, it's just a true honor, and I have nothing but love and gratitude for the university and the instructors and professors and everyone there, and it's going to be just so great seeing them again, and you know, seeing all the incredible things that, you know, other people are doing. You know, who went to McEwen as well.
Folks, I mean, on this show, I talk a lot about a lot of different subjects when it comes to resiliency, stoicism, hard work, determination, creativity, humor, all these things. Brennan is all that in a bag of chips. But let me tell you something about this guy. When it comes to persistence and determination, this is a guy that for the University of McEwen, he got rejected, I don't even know how many times, for his application to even get into the school. And now he's a designated alumni for achievement in his career and field. So if anyone's listening to this, like, imagine you struggling to get something done or be achieved or getting that job or getting the application approved for whatever program it is. This guy gets rejected, comes back again and again like Rocky Balboa. And it's no coincidence he's an Italian man. He just keeps getting back into the ring. And now he's being a distinguished person. And I mean, I think the stat you showed me was that 75,000 students since the inception of the university, and there's been like less than 100 alumni. And for someone who didn't even get accepted for the first time to be invited back, and you're still a baby in your career, man. You're not even like maybe 10 years into your career, man. Like, what's going to happen in 10, 20, 30 years? They're just going to give you the goddamn key to the city. So, and let alone the university. So, I just want people to think about that. And just understand that anything is possible. If you can just, keep persistent, that translates into everything. Like, listen to him talk about investing, no business degree. Look at him talk about the Oilers. Yes, he's got a background in hockey, but, you know, he's, this guy is just the one of a kind. So, Brennan, any final thoughts? And tip of the tongue for the folks out there, or maybe get him inspired and get him fired up.
Oh man, I just appreciate you having me on. I'm very blessed for this friendship, and it's super exciting, you know. And I mean, hey man, that was a really great outro. But yeah, no, I got rejected, I think, three times trying to get in that program, but just never gave up. And once I was there, I was just dialed in. I don't even think I had a sip of alcohol for that first year. I was just so excited to be there. I remember, you know, spending time in the libraries from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m, you know, Saturdays, Sundays, just, you know, I wasn't the smartest guy, but I knew I had to outwork everyone else just to try and get, you know, get through. And a lot of those life lessons, the best life lessons, I think, come from outside of the classroom. You know, all the work and everything you put into it. But I mean, look at you as well, too. I mean, look what you're doing with Station Park. And, you know, I mean, ran up the ranks at PepsiCo pretty quick. Again, you know, where traditionally we haven't had, you know, the education that, you know, most people would be looking for in a lot of these positions. But, you know, a lot of this comes with just determination, being self-taught, and you know, wanting to, you know, just outwork and outrun anyone that, you know, that we have to be there, you know. And it comes at the end of the day just from wanting to make a difference, you know, either helping someone, wanting to change the city, wanting to, you know, try and leave a legacy. But I think at the end of the day, you know, we want to leave this world better than, you know, we found it, and to hopefully be remembered for it. I know we're still very young and might seem crazy talking like that, but, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, that's the impact that we can have, you know, on people's lives, man. But, you know, for us, it's been like 10 years since we kind of rekindled our friendship from high school. And, you know, we got to be celebrating that this summer too, man. But
totally, man.
You know, very thankful for you. Love the podcast. Love listening to all sorts of different topics, man. you know,
yeah,
you know, learning a lot of different things and stuff like that too. But it's
good stuff.
Yeah, man. you know, it's phenomenal and just blessed to have you as a best friend, man. And looking forward to just enjoying it with the city champions, whether we're on Jasper, Ab White Ave, you know, at the end of the world, you know, the Fringe this year, man, it's going to be a lot of fun, but blessed to be with the best, man.
Hey, man, I echo everything you just said, man. It seems like it's not a coincidence that it's been a decade of a best friendship, and we got the Oilers in position to be Stanley Cup Finals, you know, knock on wood. We got you getting alumni awards. We got Station Park coming into the fray. We got country music shows and everything. It's like everything, the stars are aligning, man. So a decade of hard work. Looking out for two decades of hard work, and we can get like the Bellavo Brown Oppenheimer group going, and who else, God knows what else, coming down in the next 20, 30 years. So this is just the peak of the tip of the iceberg, and it's going to be fun looking for posterity's sake in 30, 40 years at these kind of interviews and talking about what we wanted to get done for the city and for ourselves. You know, beyond world domination, just giving back, like you said, helping other people and paying it forward. I know people who are going to be listening to this knew nothing about investing. They came out a lot further than, you know, if they were to start studying books and stuff. Like, you laid it out beautifully. So that's what it's all about, man. We got to pay it forward. And I learned that from you. So I'm very, very excited to have you on the show, man. And, I guess this is how we normally end our phone calls, but I'll say it on the podcast, but, how about you keep the wheel spinning
and all the beautiful people out there grinning, baby.
100%, brother, love it. Folks, thanks for tuning into another episode of Akeem's Dream Show, and until next time, keep your stick on the ice. Let's go Oilers.
All right, one love, peace.